Hi, this is Tom Salami of Device Talks. Welcome to the Intuitive Talks podcast. Surgical robotics presents an enormous opportunity for companies. There are surgeon shortages, sporadic healthcare, and miraculous technological advancement in both robotics and communications. So to understand where this sector is headed, we invited senior executives from Intuitive to share their company's impressive story. Change is coming. Consider these upcoming episodes to be guideposts for the future to follow. Hey everyone, this is Tom Salami of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Intuitive Talks podcast. I'm very happy to share a great conversation I had with Aman Jetty. She is the Senior Vice President and General Manager of Intuitive's multi-port platform. That means Da Vinci 5. So she's leading one of the more influential programs in medtech. Aman started her career in medtech at the encouragement of her brother, who was a physician, and followed that path through startups, through Abbott, and finally to Intuitive, where she started about a decade ago. She previously led the single port business. Now she's in charge of multi-port. So we had a really far-ranging conversation, not only what Da Vinci means technically and what it does technically, but also what it could mean to surgeons and to patients. So I'm really grateful for the time that Aman took. But before we begin this conversation, I want to thank our sponsor, Aptix. I'd like to hand the microphone over to my colleague, Kayleen Brown, Managing Editor of Device Talks.
Toby Allenbrand, Senior Vice President, Global Operations for Aptix. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, Toby, our audience absolutely knows how much Device Talks loves Aptix, but for those who don't know, can you please tell us more about Aptix?
Absolutely. Aptix brings together the aptitude and excellence of more than a dozen companies with a 70-year-plus track record of manufacturing. While our name may be new, our history of helping customers with complex challenges with confidence is not. We're proud of our legacy of entrepreneurship and make-it-happen mindset. We pair this can-do collaborative spirit with deep expertise and specialty capabilities, including molding, extrusion, coating solutions, and assembly. Across our global network of more than 10 locations in the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and China, we can provide comprehensive support to our customers to manufacture their competitive edge.
Perfect. Thank you, Toby. Let's take a quick break to bring you our interview with Intuitive's Dr. Aman Jetty. But before doing so, please visit aptix.com. That's www.aptyx.com to learn more about how Aptix can help you manufacture your competitive edge.
Well, Aman Jetty, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. Delighted to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to finally have you on Intuitive Talks. You've obviously got a very important position there at Intuitive and a career that I want to delve into a bit. I think you're one of the few Intuitive folks I've talked with who really started off like hardcore medtech. And that's probably not a fair statement, but a lot of the folks I've talked to at Intuitive seem to have found their way into medtech through robotics. But I'll stop telling people about your career and let you do that. So, Aman, what was it that drew you into the medtech industry?
Yeah, happy to share that journey, Tom. You know, my brother had a strong influence on my career. When I was in high school and, contemplating different college majors, he was already a practicing surgeon.
Oh, wow.
And so I had a great opportunity to see him in action. And I often heard him talk about how he loved helping people, his patients, but that he also often felt limited really by the number of hours in a day that he was able to do this. Surgery is not necessarily quick, right? It takes a few hours. So the number of patients you can help is really limited to the number of surgeries you can perform. In one conversation that I recall with him, he really encouraged me to move upstream from the practice of medicine. And by this, he meant medtech engineering or product or therapy development. And, a surgeon's impact is patient by patient, So his thought was that if I could help more people, that would be great. It wouldn't necessarily be directly helping people, but it would be maybe more impact. So I chose mechanical engineering in my college as my college major, and eventually I did a master's and PhD in biomedical engineering.
Had you considered medicine? Was that something you were actively thinking about, or by that I mean being a doctor? Or were you just mildly interested in the field?
I did consider that at some point, especially given my brother's background. But I also had a strong affinity to math and physics. Mm-hmm. And so that also was a factor into it.
That's fantastic. And you hear especially doctors who have left practicing medicine to join a company, they're doing so at least partly to help more patients in their minds, because you're right, they're able to move upstream and help to guide product development. So it was very perceptive of him to share that with you at such an early stage in your career. What was your first med tech position?
I really had the opportunity to work at startups early on in my career. Mm-hmm. As a mechanical engineer, I started working as a design engineer. And, as I mentioned, 6 different medical device startups. These were all small companies, sometimes fewer than 200 people. And I had the opportunity to work on a variety of different medical devices, ranging from bovine pericardium, cardiac valves, various catheters, intraosseous infusion devices, and magnetoencephalography, which is a form of functional brain imaging. And so working at a startup, you're required to wear different hats. And I had this amazing opportunity early in my career to not only work on design projects, but also build manufacturing lines, set up quality systems, prepare 510Ks, you name it. And so this really early experience helped me develop as a MedTech Swiss Army knife, if you will.
That's amazing. And looking at your LinkedIn profile, I see the startups you worked with, and they were all in Vancouver. And I don't mean to sound dismissive like that, but I didn't realize Vancouver had such a robust MedTech startup ecosystem.
It had a small MedTech sort of community, and it was really driven based on a lot of government funding that Canada was doing at the time for startups and continues to do for startups in the medical device space. So there was a growing field, and some of them had modest success. One was acquired by Teleflex, another one was acquired by a Swiss company. So there were some modest successes in that time frame.
Interesting. And I wonder, so this is the time period from about 1999 to 2005. That's when Intuitive was really starting to get a lot of attention, or at least its early attention, and surgical robotics in particular was starting, I think, to pique people's imagination. Did you have any awareness of surgical robotics at the time as someone who was really in a pure med tech environment? And did you have any impressions as to what surgical robotics may someday play in healthcare?
Yeah, I certainly had the awareness. I don't think I had the full appreciation of what was going on and the progress that Intuitive was making. And that exposure didn't happen until a little later, really in 2012 for me.
And in between, we'll get into that in a moment, but how'd you find your way to Abbott Diabetes Care? And where did you locate to? That's not up in Vancouver. That's someplace else.
That's right. So after the stint in the medtech startup world in Vancouver, I sort of got tired of the startup scene and wanted something a little bit more long-lasting. So I joined Abbott in the Bay Area. Abbott at that time had recently acquired a company called Therasense, not to be confused with Theranos.
good clarification, right?
Yeah. And they had, you know, the traditional finger prick glucose measurement strips that are used for diabetes management, but they were also working on continuous glucose monitoring devices. So I joined as an engineer on the subcutaneous sensor for their continuous glucose monitor. It's currently in the market as FreeStyle Libre. Back then, the first gen product was branded as FreeStyle Navigator. So I... Yeah, that's how I joined, and I had the opportunity to change roles a few times while I was there. So I did, you know, I was an engineer, but then also moved into new product engineering, new product introduction and operations.
Wow. So let's fast forward to 2012, I believe, when you joined Intuitive. So the early part of your career, you seemed to, with the startups, you had a mix of companies that were in surgical and not, and then Abbott, of course, diabetes, while it's doing great work, is not in surgical. Going back to your origin story with your brother, who's a surgeon, sort of giving you advice, did you feel as if you wanted to be directly involved in a surgery device, or did you feel as if you were fulfilling your mission by just developing cool medical devices, no matter what, how they help people?
I really didn't have the awareness. I wasn't really aware of what was happening. And so really my way to Intuitive happened through an Abbott connection. So, you know, while I was at Abbott, Abbott was dealing with some complicated regulatory compliance issues. And this presented another great opportunity for me. I was asked to lead part of the team that developed, you know, necessary quality system improvements. So, you know, it was really hard work, but the experience was really great. And it was actually what led me to Intuitive. So while I was doing that, there was a coworker at Abbott who had visibility to all this compliance work. And she left Abbott to join Intuitive. This would actually be her second time at Intuitive. She was what we, you know, endearingly here at Intuitive call a boomerang. She had worked at Intuitive, left to join another company, and then came back. And we have a term for it because it actually happens frequently. So then she left Abbott and came to Intuitive and really encouraged me to join. So the first time I came on site at Intuitive at our headquarters, she had arranged for a demo. And this was the first time I was seeing Da Vinci. I sat behind the console and did a test drive on the system, which happened to be an SI system. This was a third generation robot. And I think that was the time, that was the moment. I immediately saw the value of the technology, and really drawing on that early conversation with my brother, I just was excited to join a company with a mission of improving surgery. It was such a hard thing to miss at that point.
Mm-hmm. How do you think it was perceived from others in medical devices? Do you think there was an acceptance that this is how things will happen in the future? Do you think it was seen as more of a novelty that, you know, may have potential someday? When you joined Intuitive, what was the perception that you of the company at that time, and from your perspective?
So I joined in January 2013, mm-hmm. and at that point, Intuitive was probably about 2,000 to 3,000 people in size. It was a fairly small company. And, you know, we had some penetration, but it was still very early in the adoption curve, I would say. Some of the conversations that I would have in my circles was that there's still some way to go, and this will take time to establish as the standard of care. And of course, you know, the past decade has shown that it has become the standard of care. So really an exciting journey.
That's remarkable. So I want to kind of explore your move from engineering into more operations. And I think it started with the job at Intuitive, although I'm not sure where director of product quality would fall. But more broadly, did you see moving into an operations role as something you wanted to pursue and sought to achieve, or did it sort of just become available to you as each opportunity appeared in front of you?
It naturally unfolded. I want to say that I, you know, unfortunately didn't really have a very clearly defined career path formulated in my head. And maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't, you know, but that was sort of my state of mind. And I, a lot of opportunities sort of were presented to me, and the way I viewed it was, where can I bring value and where can I help solve a problem? And so I gravitated towards that. So, you know, to go back to your earlier point, I joined Intuitive. It was in January 2013, and I joined as director of product quality, which, you know, was very interesting timing. Within a few months of joining Intuitive, and similar to the time at Abbott, at Intuitive, we also had some quality system compliance work that had to be addressed. Mm-hmm. So I spent the first couple of years at Intuitive working on those. We also launched DaVinci Xi in 2014. And as you're aware, DaVinci Xi was a significant launch. You know, on the robot, we had moved from the SI architecture to the boom mount architecture. We also had new instrument interfaces, new vision, new accessories, new software. So there was a lot of new technology and a lot of complexity, which made my role in quality very interesting and very challenging, to say the least.
I bet.
Really led to some accelerated learning, I think, for me. After a few years in the quality role, I was offered the opportunity to move upstream into an engineering role again, leading new product introduction, manufacturing engineering, and product engineering for our robots. So really, my team was primarily responsible for improving quality, reliability, and cost of the DaVinci robot through design and process improvements. So I did that for a number of years, and then I was asked to take on the role of the general manager for SP.
All right. Wow. Well, just to pause on this moment, I don't keep tally of this, but I'd say about half the people I talk to have a plan, half the people don't have a plan. So I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way. Do you, though, have a – if you're mentoring someone, giving some advice to a young person, do you tell them to have a plan, or do you have another piece of advice that you might share with someone who's moving into med tech engineering, biomed engineering, but wants to, you know, build a long career?
I think the advice I often give is at least know whether you want to be a vertical, technical expert and a technical leader, or if you want some broad sort of general management role. And I think for me, the recognition was early on that I loved going deep and I loved the vertical and the technical roles, but I also had the curiosity around the adjacencies of those roles. So if I was in engineering, I was really curious about regulatory and quality and clinical affairs, for example. And it was a curiosity to understand what are the other functions that impact my role or what I, you know, impact surrounding my role. And I think that curiosity just naturally led to broader understanding and a broader set of roles. But the advice I give is at least have that conversation with yourself. Do you want to be the deep technical leader or do you want to be the broad leader?
Do you feel as if one or the other has a greater impact on the number of patients you're helping? Again, going back to the advice from your brother, do you feel as an operational person you impact the system more greatly, or does that happen at the engineering level, or is there no answer to that question?
I think you need all.
Yeah.
Not, you know, you can't achieve what Intuitive has achieved or what many other medtech companies achieve with one type of personality. So it requires all sorts.
You're all pulling on the same rope in the same direction.
We're going to take a quick break from our interview with Dr. Iman Jetty of Intuitive to bring back our sponsor, Toby Allenbrand, Senior Vice President, Global Operations for Aptics. So you mentioned a 70-year history in manufacturing and a range of solutions. Can you expand on that history and how you support medtech customers?
Definitely. Our history starts with molding as a core strength. Because of that, there's nearly nothing we can't do. That's injection molding, dip molding, or blow molding. We opened operations in 1949 with the founding of Sites. We became a leader in complex injection molding, specializing in applications to support robotics, drug delivery, and more. Some of the keys to this capability's success are materials and tooling expertise. We work with hundreds of resins, including a broad range of engineered materials such as highly filled glass nylons and heat-resistant PEEK. You can't mold without tooling, and that is why we have best-in-class mold design capabilities. Whether we use an in-house tooling to support quick-turn solutions or a well-established third-party partner. Dip molding is another core competency. As a pioneer in dip molding for over 60 years, we have grown our footprint through innovation and acquisition.
Wow, so that's a deep history in molding. Outside of molding, are there additional capabilities that Aptics provides?
Most definitely. We also manufacture millions of feet of extruded tube annually, and extrusion is a growth area for us. We are consistently adding capability and capacity to support our customers' requirements. In addition to the strength in molding and extrusion, for over two decades, we've been a leader in supporting coatings via our Dip Tech Systems acquisition. We work from applications to automation and equipment manufacturing and can support virtually any need. Having this broad set of capabilities allows us to provide assembly across our global footprint in white rooms and class 7 and 8 clean rooms. Like most things, quality work begins and ends with people. You're only as good as your talent, and engineering expertise is the core of everything we do. It's the heartbeat of our company.
So Toby, one of the things that you just said that really resonated with me was that engineering is the heartbeat of Aptics. Can you share more?
This may be my favorite topic. I mentioned our make it happen mindset. Making it happen is our tagline and also a core value. It's something that happened organically. When we were working on the rebranding to Aptics, it's the feeling that really came through about our team and culture. So how does this correlate with engineering? We like to say that there's more to making it happen than just making it. Our team is fully invested in our customer success. It starts even before submitting a quote. We take the time to fully understand the customer's objectives, identify potential challenges, and advise on design changes that could save time, money, and frustration. It's all a part of earning the trust and setting the stage for success. Once the project is a go, we remain intensely focused on getting things right early on to avoid costly corrections down the road. We go deep with predictive tools, help refine design and process, and find solutions others miss, because we know our success depends on our customer success.
You know, Toby, I actually have personal experience with this. So we've had the pleasure at Device Talks of learning from Ray Shear, also known as the Great Ray Dini. He has a really special way of communicating his passion for engineering and tackling a challenge.
Oh yes, you know Ray. As you've seen firsthand on Device Talks Tuesday, he loves nothing more than collaborating and utilizing his deep expertise in mold flow and predictive tools to find a winning solution. Like Houdini, the great Ray Dini never gets boxed in. The more complex the challenge, the more he lights up. You can always count on Ray and our team of talented engineers to partner and find a smart solution. They truly are the heartbeat of the company and embody the make it happen mindset.
I love that. Toby, is there anything else you'd like to share about Aptics?
Absolutely. We have a great team and we're extremely solution focused. In addition to our growing team and our active investing in our infrastructure and technologies and capabilities, all to better support our customers and the patients we serve. When we tell our customers your products are our purpose, we mean it. We know that the products our customers make matter. We know it's critical to deliver on our promise to them and ultimately to the patients we serve. At the end of the day, that's what really matters to us.
I have so thoroughly enjoyed our time together, Toby. Thank you. Toby Allenbrand, Senior Vice President, Global Operations for Aptics. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
To learn more about Aptics and how Aptics can help you manufacture your competitive edge, please visit aptics.com. That's www.aptyx.com. And now back to the second half of our interview with Dr. Iman Jetty.
So you in 2021 became senior vice president, general manager of Singapore business unit. Help me understand that. Well, you're now the senior vice president, general manager of Multiport business unit. So we'll get into that in a moment. But talk to me, if you would, just about your old gig at Singapore. What is the Singapore business like at Intuitive? What are the products that fall under it?
Yeah. So you know, I'll hit on a couple of points. First, the role, and then also the product. You know, moving to SP was my first general management role. As the general manager of the Singapore business unit, I not only oversaw the technical aspects of the business, such as product development and engineering, but now also had these broader responsibilities, such as, you know, setting up and executing a multi-year strategy to make sure that the business is growing and becomes accretive. So it was certainly a broader role, and admittedly, some of these areas were a stretch for me, especially coming from engineering and technical management roles. So it was probably the most uncomfortable I've ever been in any role. But you know, it's I think that discomfort that became a fantastic opportunity to grow and to learn. So on the product side, Singapore is a technology with a very unique architecture that enables the same surgeries that we are able to do with multiple incisions, but through a single incision. When we launched Singapore, it was a rather challenging time. We launched Singapore into a market that was already well supported by our multi-port line. So, you know, as an example, in the US, the FDA originally cleared single port for urology, which was an area where multi-port had already made strong strides. So, you know, we also had clearance for transoral surgery in the US with single port, but that's also sort of a rather smaller segment of the robotic market. Meanwhile, in Korea, single port had been cleared for a broader set of indications. So there was a lot of learning that was happening from the early innovative US and Korean surgeons. And, you know, some of this learning was around where SP brings value. So for example, the initial hypothesis which we had developed SP was based on the value that single incision, you know, is better than multiple incisions, that somehow reducing the number of incisions leads to better surgery. But what we learned along the way was that there was value also coming from how the technology enabled reaching the anatomy in different ways, in less invasive ways. Mm-hmm. And that was a learning that we had to go to through. So for example, certain surgeries, whether lap or robotic, you have to go through the peritoneum, which is this sac that holds the abdominal organs, and you have to enter the abdominal space. But with SP, you can access that same anatomy by going around the peritoneum, never even entering the abdominal space, leading to a less invasive approach. So, you know, that was some of the work that had to be done, and was lots of great learning from the field. Now the SP team is working on growing the indications in the U.S. as well as working on a global expansion strategy. And as you know, we've now been cleared for use in Japan and the EU with a broad indication set. And we're seeing, you know, it's still early, but we're seeing a lot of good growth in these regions. So really doing well on Singapore, I would say.
So is there generally a feeling that the future has a place for both single port and multi port? I think for to the layperson, they might think, as you indicated, that the intuitive understanding, and pardon the pun, is that single port would be the ultimate destination for surgical robotics because it would be less invasive. And you did just cover this in your answer, but how do you see it? I'm sorry for my rambling question, but what does the future look like for surgical robotics? There's a place, I imagine, for both multi port and single port.
There's a place for both, and it's making sure that the right tool is used for the right procedure. And, you know, there are certain procedures where narrow access, alternative access brings better outcomes, and we're seeing that in the literature and in the publications that are you know, being released on single port. So there's definitely room for both. And it's sort of adapting the right tool for the right procedure.
Very cool. So let's talk then about the move to multiport. Was that a difficult decision to you? Is there an intuitive rivalry between single port and multiport, and you didn't want to switch sides, or is that not present?
No, none of that. Definitely.
None of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I had been in my role as the general manager for SP for about 3 years. I was very happy in the role. And we had some changes in our leadership. We unfortunately lost our leader for Intuitive Ventures, Julian Nikolchev. Yep. He was a brilliant leader, and the world lost him too early. So that sort of led to some shifting of leadership. My predecessor in Multiport was asked to lead Intuitive Ventures, and I was asked to move from SP and lead the Multiport business unit.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the catalyst. Yeah, Julian was I've known him for a couple of decades and was always a great help to me as a young person trying to learn the medtech industry. So he was lost way too soon. So talk about what was the move like in terms of you mentioned the move into single board being a lot of. Laden with a lot of uncertainty for you, and you obviously pushed through that. Did the lessons from single port help you transition to multi-port easily, or is multi-port a whole different ballgame and you had to flex and learn and build up some new muscles to lead the multi-port group?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think for SP, I had to really broaden my learning and had to stretch myself. For multi-port, it almost felt like it was a full circle return. You know, this was at the eve of the DV5 launch, and it was just very clear that there was a lot of work ahead of us in support of the broad launch. Getting ready for scale and manufacturing and quality. And so it felt definitely a more familiar space, something that I had done previously at Intuitive in my previous roles, so but just broader. And so I was truly honored that Intuitive had asked me to take on the role.
So you joined in March 2024. You took the current role you have in March 2024. I want to just talk a bit about DV5 and what it means and what sort of iteration or generational leap it means for the Intuitive product line. But also, I want to delve into the rollout, or at least the news of DV5 coming out. Like, I just remember in January, it was kind of, there were some rumors tossed around, some words used in an analyst call, some debate as to whether a new system's coming out. And you know, I'm not sure if you were all giggling at us from inside Intuitive, but it seemed like there was this whole mystery and swirl surrounding DV5. And then you came out, and then it was all right, well, let's see what the FDA does. And then you had already kind of lined up approval, done all the things you need to do with the FDA, so you got the approval fairly quickly. What was that whole experience like? Again, I know you came in March, so it was kind of midway, but I'm sure you were involved or at least observing closely from within the walls of Intuitive. Talk a bit of, if you would, of all that transpired earlier this year in the whispers and then the rollout of DV5.
Yeah, I would say, Tom, that there's a lot of uncertainty in the regulatory timeline. And that is something that while we do a lot of preparation for, and you know, going into the submission, getting all the documents ready, and doing everything that we need to do from a design verification and validation standpoint, all that documentation, the clinical trials, all of that. But there's risk and uncertainty in the process and how long it might take. And so that's that's something that we consider when we think about what to go public on and what not to go public on, really, that it's out of our hands at that point, and we don't really have a lot of control. And so we like to, you know, as a culture, we like to make commitments where we know we can deliver. So, the clearance came through, and DV5 was launched in Q1 of 2024.
So it's been received well, obviously, from the market. Talk a bit about DV5. I haven't been following Intuitive closely for a lot of years, but to me, this system feels like a more of a generational leap from the previous one than kind of an iterative improvement. How do you view it? Do you agree with that or disagree with that?
I certainly view DV5 as a generational move or shift. Mm-hmm. It really builds on the DaVinci Xi's highly capable boom mount design. You could argue the architecture of the patient cart is the same as the Gen 4 Xi robot, which we know works for our customers, and it's been used around the world in more than 7 million procedures. So that's over 50% of the total procedures completed on any Da Vinci system since inception. So we've got a lot of usage on this architecture, and we know that it delivers for our customers. The innovation focus of DV5 has been really around implementing foundational computing power to support things like force feedback instruments, the machine vision that enables the head and user interface, case insights, as well as all these future digital capabilities. When we design our systems and our platforms, we integrate new functions and new capabilities, new indications, even new instrumentation over time. And if you think about the Xi that is operating in hospitals today, it's really not the same product that we launched in 2014. Mm-hmm. There have been a whole set of capabilities and enhancements that we implemented along the way. And by the same token, the Da Vinci 5 that you'll see today will not be the same that what you'll see in 10 years. It's really at the foundation of a generational improvement, allowing us to implement capabilities over time. And these capabilities really hopefully will make operating Da Vinci 5 potentially faster, easier, and more efficient than our current generation.
You clearly have metrics to measure the performance of the system and how it's better than the last. Obviously, success of procedures is the ultimate metric that you want to use. But how do you measure success in terms of having the DV5 accomplish with what you sort of set out to do with your mission in medtech, which was to make surgery easier, make surgeons' lives or jobs easier? You can't deal with their lives, but you can make their jobs easier. How does that play into your work with DV5 and Intuitive going forward? And is there, again, just sort of a broader mission that, all the everything we do is technically cool, but at the end of the day, this needs to be a seamless environment for surgeons to do their best work?
Absolutely. It has to make the jobs of surgeons easier. And I would say two things. First, the DV5 surgeon console has ergonomic improvements, will not only improve the surgeon experience, but will hopefully extend and lead to career longevity for the surgeon. So that's one aspect. The second aspect is that DV5 supports greater surgeon autonomy. And what we mean by that is that the surgeon can do things that they previously really had to rely on the OR staff to do. So the way I like to think about it is, imagine being completely immersed in a task that requires your focus, such as surgery. And through the course of this task, you need to make a change to a setting. So to do this, you have to interrupt your focus. For the surgeon, this means removing your head from the immersive console. And now you've disrupted your flow. Mm-hmm. So what we've enabled with DV5 is the opportunity for surgeons to control more things, such as, insufflation settings or the settings on the electrosurgical unit directly through the head and user interface. So now that's not to say that the staff can't still operate those same items, but it adds more optionality and more control and more autonomy for the surgeon to make the surgeon experience better.
Interesting. So where are we headed? What do you see the future looking like for the multi-port system? You just released the system this year, so I'm not looking for the next one yet. but maybe big picture, what does surgery robotics look like in a decade or so?
Yeah, you're right. We've just launched DV5. We've placed 188 systems as of the end of Q3. And really what we're working on in the immediate term is our broad launch configuration, which will come in 2025. Additionally, we're getting ready for our global rollout of DV5. We submitted for CE mark in Japan and are working through those regulatory processes. So there's quite a bit of work still ahead of us. I'm personally really excited about Intuitive's strong pipeline, not only with Da Vinci, but also other areas. You know, if I would just say, you know, specifically, first and foremost, validation of how Da Vinci 5 is used by our customers. This is really important to us. You know, we come up with a hypothesis, but we really want to understand not only how they use the technology, but also where the technology brings value. And to your point, this fuels into our future development. This fuels into what we want to do in the next generation or the next iterations of our design. Second, we, you know, want to continue to build on the foundational DV5 architecture that we spoke about by adding more capabilities and features. So we've got a strong pipeline to do that. And then third, for me, it's, you know, we're a global company, and it's exciting to see our growth outside of the U.S. In addition to the U.S. And so we really will continue to develop our portfolio to serve global customers, and that is the future.
Great. And just the final question, and this is sort of asking, just taking things in a slightly different direction, or actually a completely different direction. We've talked about the role that surgical robotics plays with surgeons, and we don't talk, though, much about the patients. And I'm not sure if this is something you're willing to talk about. If not, we can cut it out. But I know you had an experience with an Intuitive product as a patient, and I read your telling of the story. It was during COVID, and you had to have a procedure done, and you were comforted by the fact that when you got there alone, because your family wasn't able to walk in with you, that there was an Intuitive robot there. Do you feel that the surgical robotics have a role in giving patients comfort as well as giving surgeons support?
I think so. I mean, I came into it from a very unique perspective because, you know, in that surgical experience, my personal experience, I had the vantage point of someone who has seen all the work that goes into, you know, developing, creating, validating a robot. And so to me, that moment was very powerful because it not only represented, you know, all the work that had gone in, but all the people that had made that moment possible. That point was very, just stood out for me. And I recognize that I had a very unique vantage point going into that. But as you know, our goal is not to just make the surgeon's life easier, but also to make surgery better and more consistent and outcomes more reliable. And I think that should definitely give patients more comfort knowing that there is, you know, hopefully less variability in the surgical experience. And it's maybe less dependent on, you know, surgical skill and things like that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, it's a great MedTech story, Iman. I appreciate you sharing it and for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Intuitive Talks podcast. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Iman Jetty. I certainly did, and I'm grateful that you took the time to tell it here on the podcast. Thanks, of course, to Aptix for making this entire episode possible. please go to aptyx.com for more information about them. And of course, thanks to you again for listening, for being part of Device Talks. If you haven't subscribed to the Device Talks podcast network, please do. You won't miss a future episode of Intuitive Talks or our other great podcasts. You can also find out information about our conferences, Device Talks conferences, including Device Talks Boston, which is coming up in April 30th, May 1st. Go to devicetalks.com for more information. And again, subscribe to the Device Talks podcast network and any major application. Finally, please connect with me on LinkedIn. Connect also with Kayleen Brown on LinkedIn. And when you share this episode on social media, please tag us. Please tag Intuitive. Please tag Device Talks. We'd love to be part of those conversations. So once again, thanks for joining us on this episode of the Intuitive Talks podcast.